As if in a last-ditch effort, Peeta raises his fingers, dripping with blood from his leg, up to Cato's arm. Instead of trying to wrestle his way free, his forefinger veers off and makes a deliberate X on the back of Cato's hand. Cato realizes what it means exactly 1 second after I do. I can tell by the way the smile drops from his lips. But it's 1 second too late, because by that time, my arrow is piercing his hand. He cries out and reflexively releases Peeta, who slams back against him. For a horrible moment, I think they're both going over. I dive forward, just catching hold of Peeta, as Cato loses his footing on the blood-slick horn and plummets to the ground. We hear him hit, the air leaving his body on impact, and then the mutts attack him. Peeta and I hold on to each other, waiting for the cannon, waiting for the competition to finish, waiting to be released. But it doesn't happen. Not yet, because this is the climax of the Hunger Games and the audience expects a show. I don't watch, but I can hear the snarls, the growls, the howls of pain from both human and beast as Cato takes on the mutt pack. I can't understand how he can be surviving until I remember the body armor protecting him from ankle to neck, and I realize what a long night this could be. Cato must have a knife or sword or something, too, something he has hidden in his clothes, because on occasion there's the death scream of a mutt or the sound of metal on metal as the blade collides with the golden horn. The combat moves around the side of the cornucopia, and I know Cato must be attempting the one maneuver that could save his life, to make his way back around to the tail of the horn and rejoin us. But in the end, despite his remarkable strength and skill, he is simply overpowered. I don't know how long it has been, maybe an hour or so, when Cato hits the ground and we hear the mutts dragging him back into the cornucopia. Now they'll finish him off, I think. But there's still no cannon. Night falls and the anthem plays, and there's no picture of Cato in the sky, only the faint moans coming through the metal beneath us. The icy air blowing across the plain reminds me that the games are not over and may not be for who knows how long, and there is still no guarantee of victory. I turn my attention to Peeta and discover his leg is bleeding as badly as ever. All our supplies, our packs, remain down by the lake where we abandoned them when we fled from the mutts. I have no bandage, nothing to staunch the flow of blood from his calf. Although I'm shaking in the biting wind, I rip off my jacket, remove my shirt, and zip back into the jacket as swiftly as possible. That brief exposure sets my teeth chattering beyond control. Peeta's face is gray in the pale moonlight. I make him lie down before I probe his wound. Warm, slippery blood runs over my fingers. A bandage will not be enough. I've seen my mother tie a tourniquet a handful of times and try to replicate it. I cut free a sleeve from my shirt, wrap it twice around his leg just under his knee, and tie a half knot. I don't have a stick, so I take my remaining arrow and insert it in the knot, twisting it as tightly as I dare. It's risky business. Peeta may end up losing his leg. But when I weigh this against him losing his life, what alternative do I have? I bandage the wound with the rest of my shirt and lay down with him. Don't go to sleep, I tell him. I'm not sure if this is exactly medical protocol, but I'm terrified that if he drifts off, he'll never wake again. Are you cold? He asks. He unzips his jacket, and I press against him as he fastens it around me. It's a bit warmer, sharing our body heat inside my double layer of jackets, but the night is young. The temperature will continue to drop. Even now I can feel the cornucopia, which burned so when I first climbed it, slowly turning to ice. Cato may win this thing yet, I whisper to Peeta.
Don't you believe it,
he says, pulling up my hood, but he's shaking harder than I am.